Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Good to have you with us. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com at Mark Steiner and tweet us, or you can jump onto our Facebook pages and throw your questions out there. But 410-319-8888 is our number. We're about to have a conversation with Melody Simmons, reporter for the Daily Record, who had worked for the Sun Papers for over 20 years, and David Sirota, author, syndicated newspaper columnist, contributor for Salon.com, and Angelo Carusone. Did I say that right, Angelo?
Yes, you did.
I thought I did. I was make sure. Vice President for Media Matters of America. As we look at the Koch brothers, who are look as if they're attempting to buy the Tribune system of newspapers. And one of the things that I'll start, let me start, before we jump to other guests, David, let me start with you. And there's a lot of hullabaloo around this, obviously, from mostly liberal media and others. But what is the issue between the Koch brothers buying a string of very powerful newspapers across the country, or anybody else who could be a liberal democratic businessman? What's the significant difference here?
Well, I think there are some differences, obviously, ideologically. I think that obviously the Koch brothers are conservative, and you obviously have the liberal democratic activists who are billionaires as well. They don't tend to own newspapers. I mean, there are certainly I want to be clear. There's a difference between a political activist who uses a media organization to push their political activism and people who happen to be Democrats or Republicans. I think the Kochs fall into the former when it comes to activists rather than the latter. I'm sure you may have some owners of newspapers who happen to be Democrats, but what the Koch brothers represent, I think, is the idea of billionaire private owners, and it's not just limited to them, using news organizations as ways to infuse the news with their own political ideology. And that harkens back to the Citizen Kane era, before publicly held, publicly traded corporations bought up newspapers. And I think we're entering a Citizen Kane era. And I think at one level, the Koch brothers wouldn't be different than a political activist, Democrat or liberal, buying a paper and using it as a political organ. It's the only difference there is ideology. But at another level, it doesn't really matter who the billionaires are. What matters is what's happening to news. And I want to add one point here, that back during the old Citizen Kane era, in the earlier parts of the 20th century, at least most media markets had competition, where there may be two or three or four Citizen Kanes in your locality, so if one version of the news came out that was skewed in one way, you'd at least have another paper that was skewed another way, and theoretically you could come to some sort of understanding of the truth. The problem is now is that the new Citizen Kane era is happening where, whether it's the Kochs, whether it's Dean Singleton, whether it's Rupert Murdoch, these new newspaper Citizen Kanes are owning newspapers at a time when most major media markets are monopolies. So in other words, the only version of events that a local community now may be getting is the version from the Citizen Kane who happens to own the one newspaper in their town, and that has a potential for a very, very destructive skewing of the news in a way that won't be checked by anybody else.
And I think that has been written in by folks at Media Matters. Angelo, is that the how this could really change and alter the landscape? I mean, the Koch brothers have made it very clear that they are tired of being attacked. They feel like they're attacked by the media, and their perspective, their way of addressing this, is to control the media themselves.
I think that for me, there are really sort of two significant changes. There's two sort of big consequences of this. The first, obviously, is that the Kochs have made it very clear, and this is to pick up on what David was saying, that they see in Aspen, Colorado, 3 years ago at a large conservative conference, they unveiled what was a 10-year plan. And as part of that plan to sort of advocate for what they said was smaller government, but it's actually more consolidated commercial and corporate power, but what they said is that they see the media developing instruments within the media landscape as a part of advancing that agenda. And we've seen them dip their toes in the water to some extent, taking advantage of a hollowed out media, as David was alluding to before, with the Franklin Center, which is an institute that sort of fills the gap when it comes to State House reporting. Here's a Koch-funded institution that provides local State House reporting to starving you know, papers and shrinking newsroom. And they're essentially supplementing it in large part through, you know, this sort of Koch institution, but it's being printed and published under a local brand, a local paper, to the extent that those still exist. And I think that gets into the second issue here, which is the extension of how this becomes a big problem. Because on the one hand, it becomes a problem with the Kochs actually using these institutions and papers like the LA Times to advance an agenda. But the other part is actually a little more subtle and I think in some ways more pernicious, which is that, you know, one of the biggest things that we do at Media Matters is identify examples and instances of misinformation and sort of how they travel up the food chain from whether it be an institution or an organization or just a random sort of internet source and sort of work their way up to larger and larger and more legitimate outlets, you know, becoming a part of the debate and potentially someone's consciousness. And here with the Kochs, you know, if they were to take over these papers, especially some of the premium brands, you know, that's a big problem because it means that they can validate and legitimize instances of some of this right-wing chicanery in a way that, you know, if they would have to previously work a lot harder to get that legitimacy. You know, a local talker is not maybe not likely to touch an issue until the paper of record in their city reports on it. And I think that is, you know, one of the biggest consequences. It's a little harder to really appreciate, but very destructive.
Melody, I'm curious your take as someone who works at the Sun, also as a woman who's been a reporter for many, many years, an award-winning reporter. That there was an interesting piece in the Huffington Post that I read before we went on the air, when they questioned reporters sitting in the room at the LA Times to raise their hands of which one of the buyers what were their response be, would they stay? They said yes for one buyer, and some said they'd leave for another buyer. But over half the reporters raised their hands they would go if the Koch brothers bought the paper in L.A. Whether that's true or not, is I don't know. But I'm curious your conversations with the journalists who work at one of these trip papers and your old colleagues at The Sun. What's the sense of what's going on?
Well, there's a great amount of uncertainty. This is a very fragile time for journalism. Corporations have taken over the profession pretty much and owned a lot of newspapers over the past, say, you know, couple of decades. We've seen reporters laid off. We've seen buyouts. The Sun itself has been through many, many rounds of buyouts and layoffs since 2005. So there's always a lot of trepidation whenever you have something like this hanging. And the Sun is part of the package that is for sale. So a lot of the reporters that I talk to down there are trying to just keep going forward. They're trying to keep calm and carry on. And I give them a lot of credit for that because there's a lot of news going on in this town alone. And they're pros and they're just trying to work and do what they need to do.
Now, it's interesting in all these in L.A. and Baltimore, which I know more about. I don't know what's happening exactly in Chicago. But there are local groups who are attempting to buy their local paper that is owned by the Tribune, either from the Koch should they buy it or before, or to see if they will divide the papers up, though there may be a problem with that because of the huge debt that the Tribune, this conglomerate carries, which has been one of the problems with buying the Baltimore Sun and the LA Times individually.
Right.
So, as in Baltimore, there are there's a David Cordish, a developer, huge interest in gambling, who's looking to buy the Sun. There's also another group built around Bob Embry and Ted Venatoulis and others that are looking to buy the Sun. So this is what they've been trying to do for years but have not been able to do so.
Well, this is the thing. We did, at the Daily Record, we did a story last week, and my coworker Alex Piles talked to David Cordish. And basically, he told him he is very interested still in buying the Sun. There is no offer yet on the table because they're interested in a local spinoff, if that will be the case. There are many issues with the Sun. There's the pension issue. There's also the property issue. What's going to happen with Sun Park, that giant printing plant that was built on the waterfront, as well as the newspaper itself? And then there's the bigger question, how do you make a profit in newspapers right now if you were a new owner locally? What do you do? So there's a lot of questions here. There's a new business model that would need to be done. Some people are saying that there could be a, you know, something like New Orleans where they cut the print edition down a couple of days or, you know, 4 or 5 days and just go more internet. So There's a lot of questions. I think we're just in a very kind of a big uncertainty, a period of uncertainty as far as our local newspaper goes.
Let's see what our listeners have to say, and we'll come back to our other two guests, David Sirota and Angela Corazzoni. 410-319-8888. Bruce, you're on the air. Bruce, you there? You're on the air.
Yeah, hello?
You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm laughing. This is really hilarious. You know, I hate hypocrisy. So, you know what? Do the Koch brothers have a particular conservative agenda? Of course. Are they activists for that? Of course. But so is the Sun Papers. The Sun Papers has a liberal bias and dogma, too. But you guys aren't honest enough to admit it. Let's tell the truth. That's the way it should be. Listen, read Dan Rogers' column or Andrew Green from Maryland Voices, and they're considerably liberal, and they'll trash anybody that doesn't agree with their agenda or their policy. They're trash any politician, any bureaucrat that doesn't agree with them. Be fair. Be honest. Show some character.
Let's talk about honesty. We have also Mossberg and Ehrlich and some fairly super conservative columnists at the Sun as well. See, we can get rid of that noise. That's annoying and doesn't work well. All right. What were you about to say, Melody?
I'm here. Yeah.
Can I make a point on that?
Is this David?
Yeah, it's David.
Go ahead, David.
My point would be this. I mean, it seems to me, if I'm not mistaken, that the caller just mentioned some opinion columnists. And I want to be clear. This is not about necessarily opinion columnists or the editorial page. And I think that's the point that's often missed, that the reason why billionaires like the Koch brothers, like Rupert Murdoch, like Dean Singleton out here in Denver and with his company all across the country, the reason and in San Diego, the real estate developer Douglas Manchester, the reason these people want to own newspapers is not because they're good businesses and not necessarily only because they want the editorial page to skew in one direction. Because here's the thing, at least the editorial page is essentially saying this is the opinion section.
Right.
There is an acknowledged opinion. The reason those owners want to own newspapers is for the news pages. In my Harper's Magazine report into this issue a number of months ago, what I tracked was how the owners' political preferences are expressed in what is chosen for news coverage and what is not chosen for news coverage, separate and distinct from the opinion pages. And you see the owners essentially creating a culture in many cases in newsrooms that it says you better not cover this set of stories and you better cover this set of stories and in this way because that's the way I want it, that's the way my political preferences are. And that's a much more insidious way of skewing the news because to the average reader you just think, hey, that's the news. That's not opinion. And that definition of what is and what is not news is the ultimate subjective and, I would argue, propagandistic decision that happens in an era when Citizen Kane's political activists are owning newspapers.
Yeah, but I have to say that there are so few reporters left in the newsrooms that, the editorial decisions, you know, it's interesting to say Citizen Kane and everything like that, but you're very limited in what you can cover because the staffs have been shaved down. The number of editors have been shaved down. So you're very limited right now as it is.
I don't disagree with that. What I would simply counter with that is, and this is what I found in my reporting on this all across the country, is that what you hear from many reporters, a lot of them don't want to speak on the record for obvious reasons, is that at a time when journalism jobs are dwindling, the last thing they want to do is get crosswise with the owner who knows that they can simply find somebody else to fill their position because there are so many out of work journalists. In a sense, there's kind of a self-fulfilling cycle here where you're even less willing to get necessarily crosswise with the owner's politics for fear of seeing your job go away.
Well, I mean, and part of the issue here though is I think that this is part of an overall picture that you've been writing about, David, and Angela and others have been writing about at Media Matters, which is the dwindling of our daily newspapers, which is the kind of corporatization of media in general, how it's changed the tenor, the lack of competition locally between locally owned papers, vying for readers, whether on the internet or in hard print, And there's a whole skewing away from that, so that if you take local papers like the Sentinel or local papers like the Baltimore Sun or even the L.A. Times, which has got a semi-national paper, that the, what's been cut out in those newspapers especially has been the local reporting. It's gone. I mean, local reporters are down to a minimum. They're not doing investigations about what happens in people's communities. They're not covering those issues, and everything else gets piped in from somewhere else. I mean, that's one of the big dangers here of what could happen, what is happening, and this is just another kind of chink in that from the conservative perspective.
Yeah, I think that, you know, for me, you know, when I sort of talk about the potential takeover of the Tribune Company by the Kochs, I try to remind people that, you know, this is not the end point. It's a good opportunity to have an important conversation, because this is pretty indicative of what's taking place in the changing media environment that we currently live in, which is that, you know, more and more papers will continue to consolidate. They'll get hollowed out. You'll see the sort of regurgitation of information being, you know, republished and repackaged from, you know, either ideologically funded, you know, nonprofit sources or just, you know, just general chicanery. And I think, to me, when we think about what that means in the broad spectrum, it's a big problem, because we need to have this. We need to have functioning journalism in order to have a functioning democracy. You know, and we, you know, sometimes it's easy to romanticize the past. You know, but news in this country started out as a party press, as a product of
right. What
was political parties, and it transitioned to yellow journalism when, you know, they were paperboys selling things on the street. You needed that sensationalism, and it wasn't until there was a subscription model when the profession of journalism actually emerged as something that had ethics and conduct, and that was actually deeply valuable. And we're sort of in this transition period where we're back to this position of yellow journalism a little bit, where we need this sensationalism because the commercial product is ultimately what is dictating the news. And the more it gets hollowed out, and especially the more it gets taken over by these conservative sources, I think we see that reflected in our public policy. You know, I consistently hear cries of a liberal media, but when I take a step back and I look at the policies that have been enacted over the last 30 decades, it doesn't seem to be the product of the liberal media. You know, wealthy and corporations tended to benefit the most from the policies that we put in place. And that, to me, seems wildly inconsistent with, you know, the cries that somehow our news landscape has moved us in this direction of this liberal bastion.
And it seems, though, that with ideological driven owners of particular media, some people worry about Rupert Murdoch, who is very conservative, though some journalists will say I'd rather work for Rupert Murdoch than who at least respects the newspapers and journalism. People can argue that one way or the other. But I think we are seeing what Angela was saying, which is that the nature of media becoming much more partisan, and with the power of capital investors, many of whom are conservative or do not want certain things investigated, it's going to change the entire nature of the medium. So that smaller groups like Media Matters, smaller groups like the Huffington Post, Salon, may do the investigative work, but fewer eyes will see it. David Sirota.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And also remember that, and this is something I tracked in my Harper's piece as well, that as much as everybody who's spoken before said about the hollowing out of newspapers, the hollowing out of journalists at newspapers is still slower than the hollowing out of journalists in other media. So that and this is according to an FCC and Congressional Research Service report, that most of today's news, even though you have a proliferation of television outlets and radio outlets and internet outlets, that news is actually more based on newspaper reporting than arguably ever before, because the hollowing out of journalism has happened at a faster rate at those outlets. In other words, more of what you see, read, and hear in television, radio, and on the internet is actually based on original reporting of newspapers than ever before, which means that these new politically active owners are buying the elemental part of news. They know that they're not just buying a newspaper, and this is an important point. They're not just buying a newspaper for the market that they're in. They're buying a news commodity that then gets even more echoed in other media platforms than ever before, because there's an old phrase in radio called rip and read. Rip and read is basically you do a radio show by just ripping what's out of the newspaper and reading it and then having a discussion. That's actually happening more than it ever has before. So if you're the Koch brothers and you want to influence what's being talked about on radio, talked about on TV, talked about on the internet, arguably the best investment for you to make, the dollar-for-dollar best investment for you to make, is not to buy a radio TV, radio station or a TV network, which is very, very expensive. It's to buy a pretty serious set of newspapers, which then becomes the basis of the conversation in all of those other media.
Right, because they become the media. The newspapers are still the line of truth for most people in America.
That's right. So when you read a blog post, for instance, or you read something on the Huffington Post, typically what's being quoted is what's being originally reported in the newspaper. So if you're somebody who wants to change the direction of that discourse, if you buy the newspaper and you make sure your reporters don't go in certain directions and go in other directions, guess what? You've changed the whole scope of the conversation.
Melody Simmons, let's have arguments that actually happened in Baltimore. What do you think would be as a local example? What do you think would be the consequence?
Well, I think that it would be rock bottom for Baltimore. I mean, I think this town loves its newspaper. It loves its news. I think if there was some manipulation like that going on here, it would just be a total rejection of the Baltimore Sun by the readers, by the people who live in this community. I mean, remember, this is a blue state. You know, the opinions here are very different from a red state. And so I think that, you know, it might be the death knell for the Sun.
I think this whole thing is kind of a troubling scenario about where we may come to. And I think that we'll follow this out and ask all of our guests and others to come back to kind of look at this and kind of as it unfolds and see where this takes. Go ahead.
I did want to say that when we talked to Bob Embry last week for our story, he made a strong point of saying that people in his group really want to keep the Sun local.
Right.
And this is why there is such a commitment, an effort going on right now, people trying to get the money together, trying to get a proposal together to try to keep this newspaper community-based and locally owned. And that's going to make all the difference in the world if it's possible to buy it off of off of the big package. They don't even know if it's possible.
Right, and the same thing in L.A. I don't know about the other cities, but the same thing in L.A. There's local groups that are trying to buy the Times, the L.A. Times, to keep that local. Well, we'll continue to look at this. And David Sirota and Andrea Carasone, I want to thank you both for being with us, and I appreciate the work you do. We're gonna link to the articles you've been writing about all of this. And David, your piece in the Harper's was really excellent. So I'm encouraging our readers to go to steinershow.org and click on the link to that article so they can see it. Melody Simmons, for the work you do for the Daily Record. Thank all three of you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We're going to take a very brief break and spring us back to a local issue here, which is a local issue, Marilyn Mosby. It was said in the Baltimore Sun is going to challenge Greg Bernstein for state's attorney. Here in the city of Baltimore, we're about to have a conversation with her.